Hello, everyone. This is Allison Stanfield with Art Biz Coach and the Artist Conspiracy. My guest on this call is Anne Paris. Hi, Anne.
Hi, Allison.
It's so good to have you here.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
Well,
I'm
so
very
for
pleased.
Yeah. Well, I think that our Artist Conspiracy members are going to be really pleased too. So let me just tell them a little bit about you. Anne Paris is a clinical psychologist who specializes in helping artists and other creative people reach their potential. She's the author of Standing on Water's Edge, Moving Past Fear, Blocks, and Pitfalls to Discover the Power of Creative Immersion. And I will be sure to put that link along with this recording on the site, because I love this book and it's so relevant to, well, to every part of an artist's life, but it's pertinent to our current focus topic in this conspiracy. So I asked Anne here to talk with me about the importance of relationships in the creative process. Ready to get started?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So first of all, the subtitle of your book ends with the phrase creative immersion. And I thought that it might be helpful for you to define what you mean by that and how it applies to the artists on the call.
Okay, well, creative immersion really refers to an internal state, and it's that experience that we all have felt, and it can really be in many areas of our lives. We can feel immersed in spirituality, or in play, or in relationships, or in art or writing. But it's that state where you feel like you're just totally at one with the other, whether or not that be the medium that you're working with, or the ideas, or the brush strokes or words or whatever you're working with. But it's that state of being totally in it and not thinking about what you're doing, but that you're just in a total state of connection with the art or the work that you're doing.
So I think you also refer to it as being in the zone.
Right, and that's how I've seen it described in other places. But I, you know, it's that state where you kind of lose a sense of time and place, and that you're just kind of swept up in what you're doing. So you kind of lose your sense of self in that state. But it's also in that state where I think that we discover our sense of ourself, and that we really feel at our best, and that we're just in the flow. Flow is another word to use to describe that state.
So, well, this really does apply to us, because it's a state that we want to be in and we want to get to frequently.
Yes. Yeah.
It's where we do our best work. And it's the state where, if I hear my clients right, that that they struggle to get to, and then when they get to, they realize it's just like nirvana. I mean, it's just this amazing space. And then they wonder later why they can't get back to that place.
Right, right. And I do think that it's the challenge for all artists to find a way to enter into that state. And what I have experienced in that state is that, you know, that really cool and often surprising experience of that we are guiding the art as much as it's guiding us, and that you know, we're so connected with it that it's really a mutual experience, that the art can take us in a direction that we hadn't thought of previously. and that if we can allow ourselves to just be in that state and let it guide us as much as we're guiding it, I think it, you know, we can do our best work there and really feel at our best. Outside of creating art, I think that it's the state that just in general we feel most alive, we feel most energized and vital, and you know, the more often that we can find that state just in every area of our life, the better off we are for it, I think, and strengthened we are to continue.
Yeah, and as we learn in the book, this isn't just, and as you just said, it's not just for visual artists. It's for anyone that does this kind of work that requires being so present with it.
Right, and I think we really discover our creativity in those states. You know, it's not planned out, it's not mapped out, but that it, our creativity comes alive when we're in that kind of state.
Cool. Okay, so I imagine that it's not easy to always, I mean, it's exhausting to be in this state all the time.
And right, that, right. We can't be there all the time.
So we float in and out of it.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that I've worked a lot with my clients on, is that it is a very natural thing to move in and out of that state. I've known a lot of artists that really can beat up on themselves and get really stressed out about not being able to get into that state or losing that state. And, you know, I think that if we can accept that it does come and go, that, you know, often we can't go there on demand, and that it's okay, and that it is part of the process to move in and out of the state of immersion, that can take some of the pressure off. And really then allow us to find that state more easily.
Okay. So I know your book helps with guiding us into this state, and that's not what this call is necessarily about. But part of being our best, of being able to immerse, is, and this is why I love your book so much, because the focus isn't on really artist as hero, it's on the importance of relationships in the artist's life.
Right. You know, I think that my intention in writing the book was in hearing so many artists struggle with the process and feeling blocked or procrastinating their work, and what's wrong with me, and shouldn't I be able to do this, and does this mean that I'm not truly creative or truly an artist because I'm, you know, blocked. And and I've really understood the fear that can underlie the capacity to immerse and to get into that state. You know, that it's often, you know, the fear that keeps us from going there. And many different kinds of fears. I think there's certain universal fears that all humans struggle with, you know, the fear of losing control or letting go of control. The fear of uncertainty, that when we allow ourselves to go to that state, we really don't know what's going to come out, if anything. Maybe nothing would come out. And then there can be a lot of more personal kinds of fears. You know, what if I fail? What if it's not good enough? What if I'm criticized for what I do in that state? So I do understand that fear can be a big block to allow ourselves to go there. And my understanding, appreciation of people is that it's relationships that really can strengthen us and give us the confidence to take that dive into immersion. So contrary to what what many people view, you know, the creative process as being a very solo, individual process, that we really need to appreciate the role that relationships in our life has on our own capacity to do this very individual work. And finding and creating the kinds of relationships that strengthen us and give us the confidence to take that leap is, a good place to put our energy.
So let's talk about some of those. What types of relationships? I think you defined three different types of relationships that are important for artists to have.
Right. And I've called those mirrors, heroes, and twins. Mirrors are relationships with those people who really appreciate what we're doing and see the value in our art and what we have to offer and you know, really let us know that, and that those kinds of relationships can really give us the confidence to proceed. And heroes are those mentors or teachers or idols even that we look up to and really respect and admire their work and can even strive to be like them or to get their approval. Parents often can be initial heroes. And then the third type is twins, and those are people that are doing the same kind of work that we're doing. They're in the same boat. They really get it because they're experiencing many of the same ups and downs in the process. They can be separate people. They can be the same person at different points, being a mirror, hero, or twin for us. But it's those relationships that really help to, bolster us and give us that sense that our work is a value and worth doing.
So just to couch these in artist terms, so a mirror might be a collector or a fan, or is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or even a curator that loves your work and shows it to everyone.
Right, and that they appreciate what you're doing. Performing artists, I think, it's a big part of their experience of the audience, and if it's an appreciative audience, that they can really feel strengthened and often even become more creative in that moment on stage. And it gives the artist that sense of confidence in what they're doing and enable them to continue to immerse into it.
That makes sense. So the audience.
Uh-huh.
The audience. And which visual artists have too, it might be people that are viewing their art at an opening where they're present and
right.
Enjoying the work.
And sometimes, it's even, it can be from the most micro kind of experience where someone might look at your piece of visual art and have a momentary reaction of surprise or pleasure or appreciation. I mean, even seeing that just a small gesture can mean a tremendous amount to the artist. To the more, grand gestures of curators or people, really wanting to support and display your work. So I think there's a wide range of types of mirroring kinds of experiences that really feed and fuel the artist to keep going.
Sure, sure. And then heroes might be a teacher, a mentor, you said mentor, but a teacher or maybe even someone that they admire business-wise.
Right. I think, you know, can be someone, you know, in the same field doing the same kind of work that you really admire and get inspired by their work. But it can even go beyond personal friendships and relationships. I think, you know, celebrities and idols in our society really can serve that function, that people look up to them and really are inspired by their work. And I know for myself, I, you know, have several of my own idols that in writing the book, I found a lot of inspiration in my musical idols.
Big Peter Gabriel fan, huh?
Yes, yes. Peter Gabriel is one of my heroes. And, you know, often if I'd get blocked or stuck, I'd put on some of his music and would, you know, if I could immerse into it and allow myself to kind of, you know, get carried away into his music, often I would find that I would have new ideas in those moments or feel the energy to go back to my writing. Some people have described, too, that heroes can be a mixed bag, that sometimes they look at the work of their hero and think, oh, I could never do something so good, and so why even attempt it, and feel kind of deflated even in you know, the work of their hero.
Right.
And I think in those times it is good to go outside of your medium to be able to immerse into the work of a hero that you don't have to feel competitive with or judge your work compared to theirs.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point, because you said also in the book that, I'm just going to quote you, you said, when we immerse in someone else's art, we find our own creativity.
Right. And I think that that's kind of rooted in the idea that immersion, being able to immerse into something else, in general, strengthens us, and that we come out of the experience feeling stronger and more alive, no matter where we find that. So, you know, sometimes I'll suggest to people, too, that if they're blocked and struggling with their own art or their work, to immerse into something completely different, you know, go play, go immerse with, you know, in a relationship, in a loving relationship, or another activity, in a sports activity, and just feeling that experience of immersion will often strengthen and inspire the person in their own work.
I wonder why that is, because as artists, we try really hard not to to find our own voice, to find our own style, and so we are always, well, often told to look within. You know,
right,
to find ourselves within, to find our own voice. And I wonder why, well, and it makes sense to look at something totally different, to immerse in something totally different. But does it bring us a sense of connectedness or bigger goals?
Yeah, this is a wonderful question, because I think it points to a lot of new current research being done in terms of the brain and in neurosciences, and how our minds really operate. And what they're finding now is that when a person is in a state of connection, that everything that they can measure about a person is better. Physically, emotionally, cognitively, that really we are at, connection brings us to our best self. And so I've kind of taken some of those understandings and really applied it to the creative process, that really we find our individuality, our uniqueness in connection and in that state of connection, rather than this idea that it's somewhere buried deep within us and we must only uncover the layers to find it. It's more that, no, it's created in the moment with with this sense of connection.
I believe that. I really believe it. I feel it, I work by myself so much, but I know when I get out there and I start like visiting artist studios and talking and not necessarily immersing, but just connecting out there.
Connecting.
Yeah, and face to face really helps. I mean, that's it makes a big difference. Phone interviews are nice, but I really like the face to face. I get so much out of it.
Yeah, and that gives us a context of being. I mean, that we take that experience of connecting with others back into our solo moments, and it's not that we have to be with other people while we're doing our work necessarily, and a lot of artists cannot do it, in the presence of other people. But just that general sense that I am connected in the world, and that we take that strength back into our studio, and that enables us to do our work in private.
Love that.
Another thing I'd add here is that we can get that sense of connection in imagination too, that in the absence of other people actually being there, that we can imagine an audience, we can imagine an appreciative audience. One poet that I know said that was a very powerful way for her to do her readings, her poetry readings, that she would get nervous before, doing her reading, and that she would pull up in her imagination the memory of a particularly appreciative audience. And that would give her the strength then to do her reading.
How did she
And
do that? Just like meditate before? Did I'm sorry.
just kind of, she would just bring it up in her memory. I mean, that
Okay.
she recalled that, as a really powerful moment for her. And I think that once we become aware of the power of connection, that then we can put energy into it, and start looking for ways to feel connected with other people, or to even put energy into trying to remember moments or imagine moments of connection, and rather than just kind of again thinking, okay, I got to look inside myself and find the strength, and I don't know where I'm going to find it.
Okay. But and so just one last group, the twins. So that would be people that are just like you said, working along the same line. So maybe an artist who I always tell artists to start groups of like-minded artists that are, not necessarily working in the same medium, but are just have the same goals and maybe a twin would be working in the same medium, but having the same goals and going the same direction, maybe being at the same level in their careers.
I think for the artist, I mean, that it could be other artists working in that medium, but it could be other writers or actors or people that get the at times excruciating, brutal, emotional experience of doing creative work, and sharing those experiences, and feeling like you're not alone, and that can be, I think, such a comfort, to see that it doesn't mean, if you're struggling, it doesn't mean that you're not cut out to do it, or that you're inadequate to the task, but seeing that no, everybody goes through this, it's part of the terrain, and that can really comfort you to, accept it and yeah, keep going.
And so I like that you said that because a twin doesn't necessarily have to be another visual artist. It's someone that has the same struggles that you do.
Right, right.
Okay, I like
Right.
that. Okay, so mirrors, heroes, and twins. You think we need all of them in our lives, maybe at various times or always, all at once?
I think we're probably at our best when we have all three. And again, I separate them out just in terms of clarity, and often they are separate people. But often, a person who really appreciates my work could also very much be one of my heroes and also a twin, that it's a quality of interaction and that I'm really defining there. And I think again, in general, it's a very general principle that not only in our creative work but in our life in general, when we don't have mirrors, heroes, and twins in our lives, we are not at our best, and often people get depressed and they get very anxious and they get very unproductive, and just, it can feel very alone and disconnected, and that it's just in general, we're at our best when we have those kinds of relationships in our lives.
So, do you recommend that we try to identify those people in our lives?
Sure, to try to identify and to, once we accept that we need those other people in our lives, that we can start to look for them, we can start to put energy into creating them. And whether that means taking a class where you're apt to run into like-minded people, or even calling, reaching out to teachers or mentors in your life that have had significance. I think that it's the awareness helps you to realize where to put some energy and time, and not see it as a distraction at all from the work, but rather it really fuels your work.
So that's that old saying, we first identify them and be aware, and then you'll see
That can
them.
lead you on a path that, yeah, can help you
Right.
to find and create them.
Well,
What?
I think the hardest one for people to come up with is probably the heroes. I'm just guessing, and that's where you say imagination can come in.
Yeah, and even, really making use of the people that you may not know personally, but that have great influence. And most people can very readily identify other artists that, whose work they admire or whose work inspired them. And again, it can be in your area or different areas. But to, read that author's book again, or listen to that music, or look at that painting again, and more than likely, you'll find the same inspiration that you'd initially felt with that.
Okay, so do we and I get that. I think that's where most of my heroes are. Dead.
People who are lucky enough to have very supportive family, I think, very supportive, appreciative parents do this naturally. This is all natural. That in a natural state, if you've had good experiences with mirrors, heroes, and twins growing up and through your life, you naturally have those relationships and look for them and cultivate them. But unfortunately, many of us haven't had that experience, and so sometimes early in life, kind of give up on finding that, and that it's hard to believe and trust that people would be supportive. And that's where I think a lot of people shut down and really don't trust there are people out there that would be, you know, mm-hmm. serve those kinds of roles for them. And so there I think it gets into some of the more deeper personal issues that in terms of
deep
trust,
I'm sorry, you cut out for just a second. The deeper personal issues
where you really have to grapple.
Oh, there went again.
I had another call.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's okay. That's okay.
But yeah, that those deeper you know, feelings and okay. assumptions about people that are really formed early in life.
Well, we also have the art teacher that told us our work was crappy, and the other artists that were critical of the artists can be really harsh on each other.
Oh yes, and the critiques and the rejections mm-hmm. that all artists go through, you know, and it's understandable then that the response is to kind of pull in and protect oneself, but I think that's the hurdle that many people struggle with and many areas of their life mm-hmm. is how do I form healthy relationships that really, you know, and mutual relationships. Mm-hmm. This is another way to, you know, create these kinds of relationships is to, you know, become a hero to someone else, you know, teach a class or mentor someone else, reach out to someone else and, you know, provide that kind of support for them, and you know, I think that's more apt to create a mutuality then where people support each other and in a positive way.
I always tell my clients who have a very supportive spouse to go home and hug them, because it doesn't happen all the time.
Right. It can be, you know, it can be a hurtful and kind of brutal, you know, world with people, and you know, that brings us to, you know, having toxic kinds of relationships in your life and how to determine, you know, when you let those relationships go and when you try to, you know, keep working with them and finding ways to get and provide what you really need.
And I can't remember, and I have just I think I have a couple more chapters left in the book, but do you talk about that in the book, what to do with toxic relationships?
Not so clearly. Okay. I think it's certainly an element of the whole process, but I, you know, I think that most people, you know, feel the deflation or the hurt, you know, in toxic relationships, but may not recognize how much it's impacting their creative work. And this is, you know, where I wanted to really try to bring into awareness that relationships do impact our sense of self in an ongoing way, and that includes our capacity to be creative and be productive. It's not all about our strengths and weaknesses. I mean, with one person I can feel very strong and confident, and in another relationship I may feel very small and deflated, and those kinds of experiences really, we do carry them with us, and they make us who we are. So they do have an impact.
Yeah. So the artists that I know, many of the artists that I know who are in some of those relationships, whether it's a spouse or a parent or whatever, that is not supportive, they tend to protect the art and keep their art life separate from their personal life.
Right.
Which is so sad.
Right. Both, you know, literally. I mean, that they don't share what they're doing, and that may be the best tactic with someone who is likely to just be critical. Uh-huh. You know, why open yourself up to that? But I think that the internal experience is that people shut down from relationships entirely, you know, and feel like they've just got to do this on their own, and that it's a very private private process, and that's where I think it becomes, you know, more and more difficult to continue.
Right. So you're saying if they're not getting this at home, to find these elsewhere.
Yes.
Yeah. Even if it's in the imagination.
Yeah, and having those good kinds of relationships in your life then often will strengthen you to be able to give up some of the more toxic ones and let them go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because a lot of people don't understand what a good, healthy, mutual relationship could be like until it happens.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, let's see. Let me see what I want to ask you next. So how these relationships, I imagine we don't sit down and we go, okay, I need a new twin in my life, or I need, you know, they just kind of grow organically. But if we're not able to immerse ourselves in our art, maybe it's time to look at our relationships.
Yes. Exactly.
Okay.
That most people tend to just look internally and start thinking that something's wrong with them, and you know, kind of a downward spiral. Then, to instead look outward and kind of look at some of your relationships and where you might turn to get the kind of support that you're needing. I think that just identifying the mirrors, heroes, and twins is a way to help to guide people into thinking about, you know, what are they lacking? Are they lacking someone who appreciates their work? Are they lacking an inspiration? Are they lacking, you know, these mm-hmm. relationships of people that are like them and going through the same thing? And it kind of gives you a map to establish those blanks.
Mm-hmm. Do you suggest, and it's probably going to be different for every person, but that this is a formal process, like sit down and do an evaluation when things are going wrong, or like maybe just an ongoing journaling, or?
I think that, you know, both can be helpful, and I see it kind of as, again, that we do this naturally. I mean, we're naturally social creatures, and that, you know, it's a very natural thing for us to do, but
I don't think that's true.
No?
I mean, I think it is for a lot of people, but then just some of my clients, it's just like pulling teeth to get them to be social.
Well, and you know, some I think that brings up, you know, that some people are much more introverted, mm-hmm. just naturally, and that people do have varying comfort levels with how much connection mm-hmm. they're best with, and for those people who are much more comfortable with isolation or being alone, I think that's where imagination really mm-hmm. comes into it. But that really at the heart of it, I see any attempt at making art or writing, that it's really this fundamental wish to connect mm-hmm. through their art, you know, and that through their art they will be appreciated, or they will have an impact, or they will, you know, be of value.
Right.
So
I agree.
Even isolated people are still longing for that sense of connection, and this is the safest way that they found to do it is through their art.
So it may be that it's not that they're not social, but they may be either protecting themselves, or they haven't experienced the mirrors yet.
Right. And it's where, for a lot of people, I think the psychotherapy can be really helpful, because there have been very real hurts and disappointments in their life with other people, and so they've built, you know, the kind of base assumption that other people cannot provide this or will not provide this for me, and, you know, that it gets pretty deep into a person's, how they're made up and how they're, how they've coped in their life, and it's a scary process to step outside of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so you mentioned toxic relationships. In the arts, whether you're a performer or in the visual arts, there's criticism involved. And there's
right.
criticism in the informal terms, like in the newspaper. There's criticism in whispers in the gallery. There's formal critique sessions among
right.
peers. Is this a good idea or a bad idea?
Well, I think it's, you know, it's the reality, and I've talked with many, you know, quite accomplished artists who decided long ago that they were not going to read the reviews, they weren't going to, you know, listen to the critiques. I mean, that they felt like they're just too hurtful and disrupt their confidence and their process too much, so they just try to avoid them at all. But you know, to be criticized is hard for everyone, and but that if you've got these mirrors, heroes, and twins in your life, I think that, you know, you find your comfort there and can get recentered and find some resilience, so that you can perhaps listen to the critique and even take something constructive out of it and not just be devastated by it and make use of it. And that it's, you know, all about being able to rebound from the hurt
right.
and keep going, and throw away what you don't feel fits or you don't resonate with, and continue on.
There's a lesson in that for us too, as we assume these roles as a mirror, a hero, or a twin, and to be careful of what we say.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah.
I think I wrote this book as much for artists as for the family and friends around artists, you know, to really appreciate what the creative life is like and the emotional aspect of it all, and know for myself that I would be very clear when I would show someone, you know, a draft of a chapter or something, and I would say right up front, you know, I would love to hear what you like about it first, and then you know, give me constructive feedback, but really instructing people to give me some positive feedback first, it makes the more critical feedback a lot easier to listen to.
Right. Well, Cynthia Morris, who was my coach and who is a member of the Artist Conspiracy, always taught me, she's written a number of great articles on this, taught me to ask for what kind of feedback do you want? So a lot of artists email me and they say, visit my website and tell me what you think. And I don't think they really want to know what I think, and so I don't do that. I mean, I that's my job. But you can pay me to critique your website if you want. But if you want a critique of your art, that's another thing. So I always try to be really clear. What kind of feedback are you looking for?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I guess just the main assumption is that everyone is wanting, you know, some positive.
Some positive, right. Well, in Toastmasters, they teach you the Oreo approach.
Yes, right, negative, positive.
Right, the chocolate outside are the two positive things, and the negative, or the criticism, constructive criticism is in the inside, protected by the positive. So,
yeah, and you know, I know personally it really works.
Yeah.
it really does help you to hear the negative and not feel like, you know, the whole project is worthless or you know, terrible. And you know, it can go there for people,
right.
it's you know, you're, when you've invested your entire self into creating something and really been immersed in it, and you know, it really is a full investment of yourself, the criticism can cut deep and hard. And you know, a lot of I mean, the danger, I've seen a lot of people totally give up their
absolutely.
work. And it's really sad, but true. And I think it's human, and I don't think it reflects, you know, a weak self or a weak person, or you know, this is a very human experience, and we all need that. We all need that support.
Well, and I think things like email have led to us being more terse. I know I am.
Yeah.
I know I
am. Right.
And because I don't, you know, I don't have time to write a whole, you know, positive, negative, positive. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
So I think that it's important to, for everyone listening, if you ask for feedback, ask it for it specifically in a way that will serve you best. Be sure to know what you want.
Yep. And to even ask for positive feedback, you know, people, I think,
remind people that you need
embarrassed
that.
Or ashamed or feel like they shouldn't need that,
right.
You know, but you know, to say, you know, please tell me what you like.
Tell me the strengths. Yeah, absolutely. I like that. Well, Anne, I think that our time is winding down. Is there anything else that you want to add before we...
Yeah, I don't think so. I think, you know,
that's
the gist. Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a lot here, but I think, well, I guess one thing that I would add is that you know, I think that these ideas resonate with most people, but our culture here in the Western culture, you know, really values self-sufficiency, independence, autonomy, that we've been raised to view, you know, those traits as being most grown up and most mature and what we strive for, and that it's really done a disservice, I think, to our natural social being, and that other people's response to us does matter, and that it really counters that fundamental belief that we should be able to be independent and not care what other people think about our work, and you know, be unique and individual and keep pushing on. But you know, I think that the reality is that that's not how we're made up, and that it's okay to need other people and to reach out for the support and really put energy into creating a good support network for yourself.
Excellent. Well, I know that a lot of our artists, conspirators have done that in our forums and connected
things like
outside.
That you've created.
Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, those are so available online and, you know, to take part in those and to, you know, find a community there if you don't have one, mm-hmm. you know, in your personal real life.
Well, one thing that I found is interesting, and one of the reasons I love doing workshops live so much, is that people connect in person and then stay in touch as online,
right.
or vice versa. They meet online and then they meet in person, which is really cool. So,
oh, yeah. There's a lot of opportunities that way. So
I enjoy that.
Wonderful.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge with us.
Thank you. I really enjoyed enjoyed talking with you.
Well, I encourage everyone to check out from the library or get Anne's book. It is not an expensive book, and you should have it. It's called Standing at Water's Edge, Anne Paris, and Anne's website is anneparis.com.
Great, so, and it's available on Amazon and on the website.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, thank you again, Anne. Thank you to everyone that is listening. I appreciate your being here and being a member of the conspiracy, as always. This is Allison Stanfield with Art Biz Coach.